Is there any meaningful pressure from opposition parties that could be useful in helping bring greater support for health research? Great question, John.
John, great question. Opposition parties, I think, are helpful in terms of raising awareness of issues that are important. So absolutely, opposition plays a role, whether the House is sitting and we're in a regular parliamentary session, or whether we're in an election year. I think the challenge, and we had this discussion several years ago heading into the 2015 election, the challenge in any election year is health research, I would argue, is almost never going to be a top election issue. Mm-hmm. And in the times that we live in, the economy will always be at the top of that list. And in more recent years, so is the environment. Mm-hmm. So we have to connect into what the people are worried about, because you can be sure if Canadians are worried about it, so is all of the parties. So to me, as useful as the opposition parties can be, they are only useful to us when we can demonstrate that the Canadian public really care about our issues. Then they'll really take those up and champion them for us.
Yes. Thank you. And Mark has a question about the Strategic Science Fund. And he makes a good point, which is a point that you've made, Michelle, that so many of these initiatives are starting later. It's a wait and see. And they are proposing 2022. And he's asking, why the delay? And how big is the fund?
Great question, Mark. I would say not only do I not know the answer, I don't think government knows the answer. So I don't know that they have determined what the size of that fund is going to be. But if I can be so bold as to suggest that part of the reason it's pushed back to 2022 is the government is still facing a significant challenge on the economic side of its house. And what I mean by that is, even if reelected, the federal government does not have a plan to bring budgets back to balance. So some of these initiatives, frankly, are pushed out over many years because they don't have the fiscal room to make the commitments now. Obviously, that's not the message the government would give us, but it's simply the reality.
Thank you. And I'm sure as well, because it is an election year, the investment that we would make in creating and developing these programs with the possibility that a new government may come in.
That's right.
What a waste of money that would be, because the new government, if we have a conservative government, they would be doing a lot differently. So I'm sure that's part of it as well. Julie has another question. And of course, this being an election year, she's asking, who do we reach out to ensure that health research is a prominent part of each party's platform and program?
Great question. So there are two ways to do it, and I suggest pursuing both. So each party has certain MPs that are tasked as party platform chairs. So for instance, in the Liberals' case, it's Ralph Goodale, and the MP from Ottawa, Vanier. Mona Forche.
Mona Forche, yes. Yes.
And they're the party's platform co-chairs. Each party will have MPs designated. So those are MPs that you should be meeting with. And then, of course, within the parties, they have party staff that are working away within the party developing those platforms. So, for instance, the Liberal Party staff are leading the platform development's name is Tyler Meredith. But again, all of that can be easily found, but it's really seeing the party and seeing the MPs that are notionally tasked with overseeing that platform development.
Great, thank you. Another question, Michelle, about the investment in trainees. So the government was very supportive in 2018 of the Naylor report, mm-hmm. which was a very monumental report for the health research community on fundamental science. And as we know, Budget 2018 gave an unprecedented and historic investment in research in this country. And we were expecting, to some extent, a lot of us, that the government would follow suit in terms of the investment in people and in training. And Dr. Naylor and the panel gave a very specific recommendation around trainees, and very clearly the Liberals did not follow it. And Dr. Naylor included graduates as well as postdoctoral fellows, and there was not a lot for postdoctoral fellows. The $114 million investment, well, great investment, we won't turn that away, didn't seem to go far enough. And particularly when we're looking at an economy where not all the postdoctoral fellows will be finding jobs within academe and really need support to find jobs outside of academe. So we thought that message had been heard loud and clear, and yet there was very little for postdoctoral fellows except the parental leave, and that was only for those who are receiving funds from the granting council. So I'm just wondering why they didn't take that next step. It seems to me it wouldn't have been a lot more money, and they would have really responded in a comprehensive way to the Naylor report.
Right.
So why didn't they do that in your view?
Well, I think some of that we'll know more in coming days. And so some of the things that myself and my colleagues do after a budget is really work with political staff and others to understand why were things in the budget, why were other things not in the budget. So some of that I think we'll learn in the following weeks. But I'll say this, I know there is a pervasive feeling within government that not that science is done, but that the government did what it needed to do last year on the Naylor report. They feel very proud of the investments they made. They feel they've returned the science community to a very strong position. That isn't to say, as obvious from this year's budget, that they aren't prepared to make more investments. But I think it will take sustained advocacy to really take us to the next level, where we're having comprehensive approaches so that it's not just, for instance, operations that are funded. What about infrastructure? We know that many of our institutions have deferred maintenance issues. What about, you know, the supports required to run research? What about that training and skills investments that's needed? So to me, I think it speaks to the need for a constant education of Parliament about it isn't just granting council money that's required to have a very robust research environment in Canada. And because we're in an elected system, every 4 years we have a new parliament, whether it's a new government or not, and that education begins again. Mm-hmm. So to me, I don't know that I can answer your specific question, why didn't they? That may come in coming days, but I think it does teach us that it's incumbent on us that even when the government is supportive, that advocacy is really required.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We have another question from Mark. It looks like the networks of centers of excellent groups were very vocal and got action in this budget. And is the message to influence the budget to make some noise?
Great question. Mm-hmm. I don't want to speak on behalf of the NCE groups because what they did is better for them to comment on. But what I'll say is this, governments do not like negative attention, and they don't like negative attention in an election year. So it is certainly not the first step I would ever recommend in an advocacy program. It is a double-edged sword to go very public in criticizing the government. That can cut both ways. And there are lots of other examples of groups that have, and frankly, have not received funding and have a very difficult time in the next year trying to engage a government it has publicly criticized in an election year. So that tactic, if it's used correctly, can be very effective, but it's one you need to use very cautiously as well, recognizing the risks if it doesn't work.
I would be interested, I know we have some representatives of NCEs on our call today, Kate and Stephanie, just wondering if you have some thoughts about that. You would have to unmute your mics or just chat in the chat box.
I will say that in particular, I saw more of what the Stem Cell Network was doing. I will admit to that. I thought it was very effective messaging. They walked the fine line. I think part of the reason they were successful is they walked the fine line of pointing out the risks of defunding rather than attacking the government and decision making. So again, message, it all comes down to messaging. It's a very fine line to walk. And I just see Kate chiming in,
yes,
saying she did a careful balancing act. And I think that's entirely right, Kate. You and I are on the same page. It's a fine line to walk.
Thank you. And we'll come back to any other comments on the NCEs in a moment. But Allison has a question, and she would like you, Michelle, to provide more information on the organ donation and transplantation funding provided to Health Canada. And she's wondering, is funding for research part of that fund?
It's not clear from the budget documents, Allison, I'm sorry. So I don't know that I have a lot more clarity, but it does indicate that the money is to develop pan-Canadian data and performance system for organ donation and transplantation in conjunction with the provinces and territories. So I think this is to address a particular data need and in almost a performance system management model. I suspect there is not research money in that envelope, but it is to be confirmed.
All right. So thank you, Allison. Does that answer your question? Yes, Allison is. Yes, good. Thank you, Allison. And Kate has added that we've not been a SCN since 2016, and that meant we needed to pursue a lobby. Our strong track record, a positive regarding peer review and the potential of the field, all played in our favor. Not an NCE. That's what she meant.
Right.
Yes. Yes, maybe that's the French acronym. Yes, sorry. Thank you very much for that. Any thoughts as well? I'd be curious, Stephanie, about some of the other NCEs and the direction. If you wouldn't mind sharing a little bit about what's happening with your NCE, that might be helpful to the group. Michelle, one of the questions I thought it was very unusual given the announcement of the Council for Science and Innovation, except for a slight reference to it with regards to the Strategic Science Fund. There wasn't much that they said about the council. And one of the things I know that our community is wondering about is what the relationship will be between that council, which presumably will have a research and innovation mandate across all the areas of research and innovation. Yes. So for those of our members who are from the health and biosciences sectors, as well as our members who are more broadly involved in social sciences and humanities and natural sciences and physics research, and then of course our colleges who are also involved in their health sciences program, I'm wondering for colleges, for all of the stakeholders, you know, what will be the relationship of this council? Will it have a direct relationship to these sectors? Will it have a relationship through the ministers and their offices? What will be the relationship with the new CRCC, the Coordinating Council that Ted Hewitt is overseeing, and the granting councils? We don't know what that will look like. So that's my first question. And my other question connected to that is, do you think the government has a vision and it's not revealing it until after it receives a second mandate, or is it just creating these bodies as it goes?
Great question. I think the government does have a vision, but I'll say this. I think it's a vision that's been informed by the community. I don't think it's a vision that they independently sort of gathered in a room behind closed doors and created, as much as it is one that has been informed by the community. But why haven't they told us how this will all work? I think is, again, more a function of, and you refer to it, the complexity of the environment and introducing a new body and creating the CCRC, these new things. It's such a matrixed community that they themselves are working out the details. So I think it's not surprising that I think their goal is to do it differently. Mm-hmm. That was the goal that started them down this path. And I think as they've progressed, they realize how complex a landscape it is to navigate. And it's almost, if you think of it, it's very much like a Rubik's Cube. And I think at times the government has made plans and looked at that cube and thought, great, I've got my colors lined up, we're ready to go. And they've turned the cube around and realized the colors aren't matched on the other side. It is incredibly complex. I think that I would attribute most of the delay in having more information to that complexity of planning. And I think a real commitment to get it right. They're not redesigning this, I believe, with an ulterior motive. Mm-hmm. They're very supportive of science. So I think they're trying to get it right as well. Mm-hmm. And so taking the time they feel they need. So at this point, I'm still prepared to give them the benefit of the doubt that they are doing that work with the interests of the community at heart and informed by the interests of the community.
Okay. Now, Julie is asking, and Michelle, if you could just share with some of our members who may not be as familiar with the Council for Science and Innovation, what this body is.
So those of you may remember that the previous government under Prime Minister Harper had a council, and the acronym was STIC, Science and Technology Innovation Council.
Right.
This is, frankly, the Liberal incarnation of that council. It will be different. It will have a different, I think, form and function. It's likely, again, to have a different engagement and so on. But it's the Liberals recognizing that they need a council of experts. I'm not even sure, but the call for nominations may even still be open. Mm-hmm. So they have not announced membership. Frankly, if they have announced the name, I'm already forgetting it. So there's still it's more in concept, Julie, than it is yet in form. But it is really meant to advise the government on science and innovation. And then all the bodies, I think, we would assume all the bodies tasked with executing on that vision.
Yes. I think, though, one of the things, so for many of you who will be aware, Research Canada created a functional innovation system model to look at the full continuum from research through to development into commercialization, either into the market or the into the health delivery system. And one of the reasons we did that was to define the interrelationships that occur among and between the parts of a functioning health innovation system. And I think this is part of the challenge for the government, and the questions that many of us have as stakeholders is that those interrelationships among and between these different entities are not clear in the minds of government or stakeholders. And perhaps a great job for this Council on Science and Innovation will help to design a model that articulates what those relationships are, because many of my colleagues on this call will say, we've got to do away with one-offing in terms of policy. All these things are connected. Research and innovation are connected, Michelle. Mm-hmm. And so we'd like to see the government develop a more comprehensive, integrated approach. And it is concerning when we do see a budget that has a lot of unformed proposals that we have to have greater discussion about. Mark has another question. Any insight on timelines for modernizing the regulation of clinical trials? Many trialists are very concerned, very legitimately, that the current regulatory regime chokes academic trials. Yes, I'm sure, Mark, our industry representatives who are on the call, Tara, I think one would agree with that. So any sense of that, Michelle?
I'm happy to answer it, but then I'm going to actually pass it back to you, Deborah, because we actually were having this conversation just before the call about clinical trials specifically. Again, this is why I say this budget is so light on details. One commentator I saw ranked it as there were many people as giving it grades, and so C+ and B, and one commentator said, I'm giving it a grade of incomplete. There isn't enough detail in here for me to assess this budget, and I'd argue he's quite right. So I don't know specifically, but I'll tell you, the lack of a deadline and the lack of an indication of how quickly they're going to move tells me it won't happen before, not likely to happen before the election. And that, I think, is a part of the concern, I think, that, frankly, many communities have after the budget was tabled, is these are great aspirational goals that the government has set, but we're not at all clear on how the execution will work. There's not a lot of deadline information, there's no timing information, there isn't any governance, and so there's just so many questions to be answered. But Deborah, did you want to weigh in on that question, given the conversation that you and I had earlier?
Well, I do think that the aim of these revised regulations, modernizing, harmonizing the system, all of the components of it that we were speaking about earlier, are towards a much more efficient clinical trials system. And I think there's still time, Mark, to weigh in and have an impact on what is done. I think that a lot of different reports and research committees, all of the the strategic economic tables that have met, the HBEST report that I know that Raj may want to speak to, and the recommendations, the government seems to be trying in this budget to respond to, but as we've said again and again during this call, not in a comprehensive way. And I think you're going to find that the government is willing to go back and consult with communities again. And I think that there's opportunities for those of you on the call who have experience and expertise and something to say about this, that you're involved in those processes. And one of the things Research Canada will be doing over the coming weeks and talking with Michelle about is we'll be having conversations with key decision makers, with deputy ministers, ADMs, key ministers, chiefs of staff, to find out what are next steps, mm-hmm. and when and how can we help? Because as Michelle says, I don't think they're 100% clear they do need our help.
I think it's an indication they recognize there's a problem. And the budget does a better job at that than answering the question of how the government will solve it.
Yes, but there is a commitment to put
But they
some
know
money.
There's an issue.
Yeah, there's
an so issue. It's almost a placeholder and, more details to come, as I said.
That's right. So do we have any more questions? I'm looking at the group of people we have here today from many different sectors. It's wonderful to welcome our members from Bow Valley College. You may have some questions about your particular sector. We have a number of academic health science centers and their association, Healthcare Can, which is represented. We also have industry well represented on this call. So there is an opportunity to ask one or two more questions. We have about 4 or 5 minutes left. We'd like to hear from you. One of the other things that it carries on, Michelle, from my constant theme, it seems to be a theme I have around not putting things together, is, you always have in the budget these separate sections, and I guess it's a way to structure a financial document through a financial or economic lens, but I often find for the research and innovation endeavor, I look at all of our brilliant academic health science centers, which are working very closely with the biopharma, biotech, and medical device sectors, and we've put a lot together, and we understand where there's a continuum of development, and it always strikes me how in these budget documents, these parts are separated and not connected. The research is not connected to the innovation, and I always find that very difficult. We have to read the research section and then the innovation section, and there are different ministers you have to talk to for these different portfolios. But we all know, working, whether we're on the industry side or academic side, that all of this works together. So I think once again, there's the opportunity through the new council. But what would you say about that? Is there a way, when we're chatting with financial officials before budget, to help them to maybe even restructure the budget differently? Because it is a framing document that governs, you know, government policy and how they're going to go forward.
Yes.
In putting forward their programs.
I think it's a great point. I think for many of us that read the budget document, which frankly is not a financial document, it's more of a, I hate to say it, a public relations document. A lot of the detail are not in the document, but you can tell that it's not written by someone that understands the community, the landscape well. It's written for a different audience and for a different purpose. In fact, it was several hours after the budget was tabled that I realized they had health research money in Veterans Affairs.
Yes.
Because of course it was separate and I didn't immediately think to read the section on veterans. It wasn't top of mind for me or my clients. And so it was hours before I saw the reference for veterans health research. So I think it's a fair point. I think part of it is difficult in that the government recognizes that it is really trying to set policy based on evidence.
Yes.
And to do that well, they need research. And therefore, they need research in all of the departments supporting decision making. And so you tend to get this sprinkling effect.
Yes.
It would be helpful, for instance, and if any of you know the finance minister, you can pass this suggestion along. They could certainly table compendium documents that would have a health focus or a health, a science and research focus that would distill that information differently than the budget document.
Yes.
That might be a helpful appendix for them to consider, because as it is, you really do have to scour cover to cover, or you may miss a budget line that's very relevant to the community.
Your sector, yes, that's what our advocacy organizations do for our communities. So we'll take one more question from Mark, and we absolutely welcome your questions, Mark. Tara has had to leave the call, but Mark is saying, will dollars for graduate PDFs flow through the tri-councils?
I actually don't know the answer. I would say yes.
Yeah, likely social
science.
Because
it won't come through the strategic fund. That's not going to be up till 2022. So I, in the absence of a better mechanism, I suspect it will, Mark.
Good. All right. Well, I'm going to pull back the screen. Hello, everyone. I'm back. I just wanted to take this occasion first and foremost to thank Michelle so very much for her insights into Budget 2019. And we can carry on these webinars when we have more information. Mm-hmm. Research Canada is very happy to organize another webinar and bring Michelle back and fill in some of this information for all of you. It seems that, as Michelle has said, this is a budget in the making. It's not quite yet to full fruition. And I guess it'll take a lot of us who are advocating for our respective interests, meeting with key decision makers and key members of the civil service to put this together and understand it better. So I also want to take this occasion before we draw our webinar today to a close to thank Christy Tompkins, our manager of policy and public affairs, who's really been instrumental in putting together the program for this webinar, and she's running all the technical aspects. So thank you to Christy very much for this. And I wanted to let our members know that Research Canada will be providing you with an analysis of the budget in short order in the next couple of days that will help you to digest a little bit more what these proposals mean. I also want to take this occasion to thank all of our members for joining this webinar today. And I look forward to the next webinar. We'll be in touch. And thank you again, and thank you to Michelle. And hopefully we'll see you again very soon. Thanks to all, and have a great afternoon.